Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway,
a podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. You know, that small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, though, I want to mention our monthly guidebook workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians, and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass. And if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit the subscribe link in the header menu, and you'll be good to go.
That being said, let's trek further down the path of
Ode to Joy? Huh.
What do you say to the question mark for?
You know what? I was saying it because that's an interesting title, and you just thought of the title. But I also kind of was thinking, you know how sometimes people say everything in the form of a question? They're just like, and then I went to the mall, and then, you know. And
you mean like a Valley Girl?
Yeah, I want to be one of them.
Like I just did.
Yeah.
Too late, man. You left LA. You had
like
your
they
chance.
Say very concrete things with those inflections, you know, like, and then I did my taxes. Did you do them? I did my taxes, you know, anyway.
What Valley Girl is doing her own taxes?
The really, really smart ones, like Kim Kardashian.
They're so rich that they're bored, that they just, it just circles back on itself and they're doing their own taxes at this point.
Exactly. So what are we talking about here? All right. Well, we'll get into the entire meaning of the Ode to Joy title in a minute, because Jay kind of put that together and he's going to kick that off. But at first, I am just going to tell you the premise here. So today we're going to talk about adversity and overcoming it. And this is something that all of us musicians will have to deal with or have had to deal with during our careers, because there's a lot of different kinds of adversity, sometimes physical, sometimes mental, sometimes it's work-related, sometimes it's family-related, it could be sickness, it could be anything. And as humans and as musicians, we have to be able to deal with it as best we can and come out the other side, right? Now, I figured that it'd be a nice change-up for this episode to kind of go through some famous cases of amazingly talented musicians dealing with adversity that you may know about, and maybe some of this is new to you. And it's always nice to hear about the other side of the story, because we as musicians, and as I guess just everyone at this point, we get this tunnel vision on social media and it looks like everyone's doing better than us. And you read these stories about how so-and-so got this record deal or blah, 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 or they're getting blown up on TikTok or Instagram or whatever it is. You know, it's easy to compare yourself and feel down about your career in comparison. But this episode is to show you that no one is impervious to any of this stuff. And all the people that you admire and you look up to, or maybe even envy, they dealt with some form of adversity. So anyway, without further ado,
I never even looked up the word adversity. It's so, I didn't think it was this simple. It literally just says difficulties, misfortune.
Yeah.
So it could be like anything. I thought it had to be like someone cut your fucking arm off.
No, no.
Like I always thought it was like some thing that I never actually had part in. You know what I mean?
Adversity,
I thought it was bigger than me.
It could be like minor or major, or it might be relative to how you perceive life. You know what I mean? Sometimes things that are major, of course, I'm a husband of a therapist, so it's like, some people can have these very, very, very horrible things happen to them and they just keep rolling right through, whereas a smaller bump in the road for someone else might be a bigger deal to them. It all has to do with you personally and your makeup and also what happened to you. But I guess before we even start the first one, we can talk about the fact that we did this podcast episode with Ray Levere a while back. And if you haven't heard that, that's a really inspiring episode. Ray is an amazing drummer, and he battled all odds of being burned on a lot of his body and losing fingers on his hand, and all these things happened to him. Before he even learned how to play drums, they gave him basically zero chance of being able to...
He didn't even have encouragement.
Yeah.
Like, his doctors were telling his parents that they shouldn't even
get his hopes
encourage
up.
Him to try to do anything, basically, especially the drums.
Yeah. And of course, he's a professional drummer.
That to me is that's more adversity than the burn part almost.
Right.
That's dealing with people telling you that you shouldn't try to do something. That's because that shit cuts deep.
But
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And again, this is what I'm talking about with how people deal with things. For Ray, it was more motivation or a challenge. You know, you should take his words or listen to his words from the podcast. It's amazing. Like I said, definitely check that episode out. But, you know, some people take it as exactly that, as a motivation, a challenge, like, I'll show you that I can do this, or I'm going to do it no matter what. I'm going to get on that bike. I'm going to get on that drum set. I'm going to do this. And other people give up for less or feel discouraged. And as Ray says in the episode, it wasn't really an option for him to go down that other path, because it was either you either go on the path where you're going to try to do everything you want to do, or you're going to enter this dark abyss, which is super fucked up. That is a great episode. Check it out. Now, let's talk about Ode to Joy. Now, Jake had this idea because of our good friend, Ludwig van Beethoven.
He wasn't really friends with a lot of people.
No.
He's pretty hard dude to get along with. But there's a reason for that.
I mean, basically, at the age of 26, you know, Beethoven, who most of you know is a German composer and a pianist, a monster pianist, of course, and one of the best composers ever, he began to lose his hearing at 26 years old, and people don't always realize that, you know.
Well, he didn't tell anyone.
No, and it started...
He had to keep that shit secret.
It started with a severe form of tinnitus, they say, which many musicians know is a ringing in your ears, which I have and a lot of other musicians have, because we were stupid and we played loud music without earplugs. But in his case, it wasn't that. It was, they think it might have been complicated by syphilis or, you know, or lead poisoning, or they don't even know, you know, what it was.
Who the hell knows? It was the late 18th and early 19th century. Could have been fucking anything.
Yeah.
Could have gotten bit by a mosquito for all we know.
Yeah. And, you know, and this random thing, when I was reading up on it, it said that, or it could possibly be his habit of immersing his head in cold water to stay awake, which I just thought was fascinating.
Nice.
I didn't know anything about that. Anyway.
He really was the first rock star, I swear to God. Man, it was awesome.
Yeah. So Beethoven's deafness, it curbed his, you know, his performing and his conducting career, right? But it did
more than that, though. It did way more than that. It, like, don't forget, he was socially accepted into the aristocracy kind of world. Did I say that right? That's the name, right? So the only reason people accepted this man into their circle, which he was with a lot of women in that circle, which he normally would not happen, was because he was a genius. So it was his music got him into these circles. So that's the one thing that got him in. So by him going deaf, it threatened his whole social life. Like, if they found out he was going deaf, they would have just spit him out and he would have just been a lonely man and not in the circle anymore. So he kept it secret. He used to write letters to his brother, one of his brothers, and he was the only one that he told for a while. And he was so freaking scared of people finding out, because they would just toss him aside if that was the case. So it turned out he became very angry and hard to deal with, because he was harboring that secret and it was kind of destroying him from the inside. He wrote letters about suicide to his brother. It was crazy.
Right.
It was so much more than music. You know what I mean? It was his entire personality was under threat.
Right.
So it was a lot, that's adversity, mentally deep. It was a big deal. And when it came out, it destroyed him.
Plus, a lot of people don't realize this, but the last 25 years of his life, he was completely deaf.
Stone deaf.
I mean, like, it wasn't even, there was nothing.
Like, he would put his ear to the forte piano, which was the instrument at that time, and it was still a new invention. He would put his ear to the, and just sort of feel the vibrations, and he can kind of get an idea. But again, a person of that level of musicianship, he could just write and hear it in his head, and he would just write it down on the paper. I mean, Mozart would write symphonies in a freaking carriage when he was riding around. You know what I mean? Like, those guys don't need instruments anyway. But like, it got bad. It got really bad. His personal life got really bad. He was an outcast for a long time. There was like a court battle for his nephew. Like, it just got super, it got to the point where literally he was a drunken old man in the streets, and kids would like pee on him. Like, he was just a disaster. And then he wrote the Ninth Symphony.
Yeah.
And it just excelled him into legend, and people were like re-obsessed with him. But yeah, the whole point of that is like the fourth movement, which is weird for a symphony to even have a fourth movement, was what he called the Ode to Joy. And it was him, you know, he was a religious dude back then. It was him praising God for like the life that he was given, even though like God had taken away his one true like thing of his talent. He took away his hearing.
Yeah, which is like a sick, it's almost a sick joke, you know, but he...
It's awful, yeah. So like he still he's praised him for it. Like that was his, like when you think of Beethoven, you think of the Ode to Joy. That's like his living forever legend. And that is literally a tune in a symphony praising God for his life, like thanking him for what he gave him. That's like the...
Yeah, it's heavy.
It's just crazy. Yeah.
So that is perspective right there. I mean, if that's not overcoming adversity and turning lemons into quarter note triplets, I don't know what is, you know? Yikes.
I don't know. Can that be a t-shirt?
Did I mix a metaphor?
I think that's a better t-shirt than what we have.
Yeah. I mixed my metaphors again. Damn it.
Wait, what was it?
I don't know. I don't even know what I said.
Did you say dotted triplets?
I don't even remember. I just say thanks. God,
I'm going to have to listen to back.
I was talking to my wife the other day and I said, you know, sometimes I don't know what I'm going to say until after I've said it. And I think that's a problem. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some other people here. Bill Withers. I read about this recently. Did you know that Bill Withers was a chronic stutterer until the age of 28? Yeah.
I wonder if it was easier to sing. Because it's like a different, it's a like different part of your brain almost.
Yeah, I don't know. But until he was 28, he said, I was never too inclined to jump in front of people and try to communicate verbally. And of course.
That's insane.
Yeah. Isn't that bonkers?
But I've heard stuff like that. Like there was this one like indie rocker. I think we used to go see him back in the day when I was living on the East Coast. I think he's Swedish. But he was in his native tongue. He would never have become a songwriter because he's too shy to sing, but he would sing in English and it would just be different. Mm-hmm. So he became a freaking front man, and just because he changed languages when he sang, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So stuff like that, I can kind of see it. I feel like it's like a different,
well, it is a part different of your brain. It is, you know? Because from what I know about stuttering, which is limited, you know, people are able to sing without stuttering a lot of the times because of something with how the brain deals with that information. I'm not a scientist, but I do know that that's happened and that there are other people I know that can sing very well, but stutter when they talk.
It's crazy.
Another one is Ray Charles. I mean, you know, everyone knows that Ray Charles was blind, right?
or just all freaking African-American musicians,
right, exactly.
In the States.
I mean,
from like, yeah.
But Jesus, I found out some even more about his trauma. I mean, apparently at 5, he witnessed the drowning death of his younger brother. And then
was he not born blind?
No, he started to lose his sight by age 7. I guess he was blind, man. Completely by 7.
That's crazy.
And with his mom's encouragement, he took up music and learned how to play stuff, you know, and by 15, he was touring the country, you know, but
really, Jesus, I didn't know it's that fast.
Yeah.
Dude's exactly. A fucking genius. My God.
Yes, exactly.
See, but you know how hard that is. Like, I don't even understand. Like, yeah. People like him, like Raul Midon, like, how do these guys do that? Something else has to just like spark inside of.
Yeah, but again, you know, it's like he's obviously, you know, genius level, talented, and all that. But he also had a drive and a resilience that helped him get past kind of all these terrible roadblocks, you know? And like you said, being African American at that time was not easy, to say the least, putting it mildly,
it was
as possible.
Your whole life was adversity. Like going to the supermarket, or not supermarket, but like market, was like you had to overcome adversity to leave your house.
You're just battling all the time.
Yeah.
Plus he's blind. Yeah.
But like the blind thing, man, I remember seeing Raul Midon, I think at either Scullers or the Regatta Bar in Boston. I can't remember. But I remember like he had the audience just eating out of his hand. And he told us a story about this place he grew up. And it was like, he literally, like a poet, it was like Robert Frost, you know, and it was insane. He was describing the place where he was born, like the water and the trees and everything, all this stuff, like the most visual representation, like a Frost poem about where he grew up. And then at the end of it, he just goes, he goes, yeah, it was incredible. I wish I had seen it, but you know, I was born blind. Right. Like the whole audience was like, holy, like we had totally forgotten that this man has never seen anything in his entire life. Yeah. And he just described it. And we were all like there. We were at this village that he grew up in, like fully immersed in our own heads.
Right.
And then he just like reminded us that he's never seen it before. So it's like shit like that. It's supernatural. Like I was floored leaving that show. I mean, if you guys ever get a chance to see Raul Midon play a show, like he's an amazing, like just go for the stories, even if you don't like his music. He's brilliant. And his brother's blind as well, and his brother is a NASA fucking scientist. Like I don't even understand it. Like it's crazy. Yeah,
I'm with
you. I just
had
to share that, man. He's badass.
And Billie Holiday, who we all know is one of the, you know, amazing jazz vocalists of all time, you know, she had a lot of shit happen when she was younger, you know.
Have you checked that film out? I'm like worried about seeing it. I think it Hulu just dropped it.
No. I mean, basically she was extremely poor. She worked as a singer in a gentleman's club. She overcame an attempted rape at the hands of a neighbor. I mean, there was a ton of stuff that happened to Billie Holiday. And she's one of the most influential vocalists in history, right? I mean,
Yeah,
there's a couple people we know that had polio. We know that, you know, Dave Liebman, who's the amazing saxophone player, played with Miles Davis. He's, you know, a friend of ours. He's on our website, on My Music Masterclass. He got polio when he was younger, and it's definitely had its toll on him. It didn't stop him from being a badass. Also, Itzhak Perlman, you know, he contracted polio at the age of 4, and it damaged his legs, which is, you know, a reason that he remains seated a lot, I guess, when he plays.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How do you, because it's like a physical thing, like how do you not freak out that it's going to like, you know, attack your playing?
I don't know.
Like at that level, I don't even want to freaking think about that.
It's all I know is that Perlman and Liebman are both, you know, amazing musicians, and it didn't stop their drive I mean, that's something that would destroy a lot of people.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is an interesting one. I'm going to read this because I got this from the internet about Stravinsky. After the outbreak of World War I, Stravinsky had to face restrictions in the availability.
They called it an outbreak?
Yeah.
He had to face pesky Germans.
restrictions in the availability of orchestral opportunities. So substantial productions that could finance big orchestras were out of the question. So the Russian composer had to focus on chamber music. This didn't stop his creativity, and Stravinsky kept working on pieces for solo instruments or small ensembles. And as the war went on,
That probably tightened his game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And as the war went on, the composer, who had to provide food for a family of 5, including himself, he was nearly destitute, right? So he started thinking about how to overcome the situation, decided to write a new work called A Soldier's Tale, which was a theatrical performance for a small ensemble and an actor. And the plot tells the story of a soldier who sells his fiddle to the devil in exchange for a book, which reveals events that will happen in the future. And with
this
knowledge...
That's awesome. Why is that not a movie? Yeah. Freaking get on that, Disney Plus.
Exactly. And with this knowledge, right, he becomes rich. So that's kind of... I wanted to read that because it's interesting. I mean, we're in COVID land here, and we have had things taken away, but, you know, that... is a very different situation, but can you imagine everyone thinks of Stravinsky as a successful composer, just as Beethoven or all these different people. But, you know, Stravinsky's here destitute because of fucking
war. Well, he struggled
war.
With a lot of shit, too. Yeah. Like, after critics destroyed him, after, you know, his music got super weird.
Oh, yeah.
Like, financially, he couldn't get anyone. Yeah, like, he couldn't get anyone to back him. He started hanging out with Coco Chanel, and, like, she backed him because she knew she could recognize genius. I mean, it's Coco Chanel. She's a genius herself.
Right.
Most badass women ever. But yeah, like, she helped him out. You know, she was a benefactor of his music, which is pretty insane. Like, it's just, the art can overcome so much, you know? It really can. Like, and it seems like he's the type of cat that would dive in creatively and, you know, that would help him out of any rut.
There's another one, too. Messiaen had a good one. Apparently, he was captured by the Nazi army and taken to Stalag, Jesus. Which was a concentration camp, when he was 31 years old. And then, when the soldiers checked his pockets.
I love how those are just words. Like, I was just captured by the Nazis. Like, yeah. that's like fucking, that is the worst thing ever. Like, yeah. How do you do anything after that? You know?
I'm Jewish and I get chills every time I say it. I know.
Jesus.
So apparently when the soldiers checked his pockets, they found scores and sketches instead of supplies, right? He was enrolled as a nurse. And the composer was allowed to write for whatever ensemble he could find in the concentration camp. And he came up with a quartet for the End of Times for piano, cello, clarinet, and violin, Jesus. Which was an unusual ensemble, right? So obviously he had to adapt to whatever instruments and musicians were available in the camp. And he ended up premiering the work on rather old and out of tune instruments. He later stated that, "Never was I listened to with such rapt attention and comprehension." You know,
that's crazy. I mean, even that situation, like, it was in itself cruel anyway, because like they would make them perform, and like it was demoralizing in a way. Like, the Nazis thought it was demoralizing, but like, really, when the performances were happening, it was like heaven for these people that were. I mean, it's, you take everything away from somebody, and then, you know, it was almost like the Nazis like didn't understand what art could fucking do. And they were like, "Oh, look at these people like trying to fucking uplift each other." It's like, yeah, dude, they were like, yeah. And it worked in those moments. It was heaven on earth for them. So fuck you, you know,
right.
That's the power of art.
Yeah. And, you know, even getting back to the Stravinsky thing, you know, I think it was in 1910 or 1913, when he premiered his new ballet, which was The Rite of Spring, right? So basically, many people know the story, but the audience did riot. But they do think that had a lot to do with the dancing as well,
yeah,
because the dancing was absurd. You know what I mean? And it was basically like this pagan, awesome, crazy thing that was way
the world
ahead
of ballet is like, it's more strict than the world of like classical music.
But it was way ahead of its time. And he's a genius. And it was crazy.
Outrageous.
And I feel like a news anchor because this just in, you know, I just saw this thing on Beethoven, even though we just talked about him. So when Beethoven was an aspiring musician, apparently he was so awkward on the violin and was so busy working on his own compositions that he neglected to practice the instrument. And his teachers felt that he would never succeed as a violinist or a composer. That's pretty cool. That's a good fact. Yeah. So, yeah. And then he overcame those odds. And of course, later on, being deaf and all the other things. So he was not messing around. Yeah. He was dead set on being awesome.
And that's not even like the, like, if you had to actually categorize Beethoven, you'd probably categorize him as like the greatest improviser of that time, which we'll never get to hear. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We wrote an article on My Music Masterclass a while back with some different adversity stories here. This is a good one. In 1962, an obscure band from England made a demo tape for Decca Records and hoped for being signed. And the label's senior A&R person said, "Guitar groups are on their way out," and the band was rejected. So that's the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
There
that's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, if they were like,
What? Guitar music was on its way out. Really? Like, I could say that now.
It was one,
like, it's gone.
A&R guy. He was wrong.
The fuck is that guy talking about? That ushered in like the greatest guitar fucking generation ever.
He did,
as far as rock and roll. You know?
He bet wrong.
guy's an idiot.
Yeah, the guy was a total idiot.
Should have been working for A&W.
All right, so we've talked before about Django Reinhardt. And first of all, he suffered through discrimination and survived in Nazi-occupied France. Again, the whole Nazi thing, right? And then he burned his hand so badly in a caravan fire that he lost several fingers, and he had to reteach himself how to play. And he became like one of the best guitarists in the world. I mean, he still does stuff with less fingers than most people that people cannot do with more fingers. Is that the right way to say it?
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, Keith Jarrett, I mean, now Keith is like, I think, kind of done, you know what I mean? But years back, I don't know if it was an accident. I don't know what happened. There was like an illness and like he lost he couldn't play the piano. Just straight up, Keith Jarrett just couldn't play the piano anymore. Right. So like what he did was, you know, him living at home with his wife, he would go into his studio every day. And like, you can imagine how frustrating this is to be Keith Jarrett and not be able to fucking play the piano. He would go into his studio and he was like, all right, this is what I'm going to do to himself. He didn't like tell anybody this. I'm going to write a record for my wife and I don't fucking care how long it takes. I'm going to go in my studio every day. I'm going to sit there and work on it. And then if it gets way too frustrating, I'm just going to walk out and I'll come back the next day. And that's what he did. And he basically like relearned physically all those, you know, connections from your brain to your fingers. He relearned how to become Keith Jarrett again, like doing that. But that's just an example of like, obviously adversity, but like goal oriented work, you know what I mean? Like, and that's a man that obviously, you know, he's a very disciplined player. We all know him, but yeah, that was pretty cool.
And same with Pat Martino, you know?
Yep.
He had I forget what happened. It was some kind of brain hemorrhage, I believe, but it caused like a near fatal seizure in 1980 or something like that. And it left him with amnesia and no recollection of how to play the guitar, you know?
Oh, that's right. I remember this story. Didn't someone like give him a recording or something like that of himself?
He learned, I don't know, but I mean, he literally.
I think that was Martino. Like they were like, dude, this is you. Yeah. Just like, what?
But he was 36 years old and he had to relearn how to play and he did. And he's the man.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that was him.
That was
that infamous story. I don't know where I heard that story, but that was, and it might be, you know, a little exaggerated, but I think that was it. Like someone showed him a recording of himself and they were like, this is you, dude.
Right. Go like, do this.
What the fuck?
Learn how to like, do
can
that.
Can you even imagine that?
Yeah. And you know, Larry Carlton was shot in the neck too by I believe that was a gang attack or something that he was just kind of mixed up in. It was like an intruder, I think, but, it definitely messed him up, but he was able to play still. And I mean, but that is adversity. We're kind of going through these terrible scenarios here because it's a good perspective to understand that, you know, while all these bad things have happened to everyone we're talking about, music was the number one thing that helped them keep going. And they all persevered and made it happen, you know?
I mean, it goes to show just like, even if you're not trying to be like a musician or a professional musician, it still just gives you the fact of like music is healthy. Like if you have it in your life, it's much like if you're, you know, heavily into yoga or heavily into like meditation, which you can do all that stuff too. But like even just having music, if you have a horrible day and you just sit down at your keyboard, put your headphones on, not disturbing anyone, and just like can play piano enough where it sounds like music, that's thousands of dollars of therapy right there that you're saving. You know what I mean?
All right, I've got one for you here, Jake. And I think this will be the last one that we'll do. Jake's going to have to guess who this is. All right. This man was born in the UK and he was one of five children and he didn't excel in school because of his dyslexia. And at the age of 15, he dropped out of school and became a construction site laborer. And he had many jobs, including being a plumber, toolmaker, slaughterhouse worker, and car factory employee. He was accused of burglarizing a clothing store, which landed him in prison since he couldn't afford to pay the fine. And eventually, he turned it all around and became... who? He's a singer.
I want to say freaking the dude from Black Sabbath.
It is. It's Ozzy.
Really? That's
yeah,
Ozzy?
It's Ozzy. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Nice, man.
I just like all that stuff. I'm like, that's some dark stuff. If he was going to be a musician, especially
Ozzy
a singer.
Osbourne. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, wow. That's, well, it's weird because you don't think of those people as like growing up in any time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's like a, like a, like
he
a
already arrived
God.
From the time you saw
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Like he just kind of, yeah. So that's, I think I'm like finally at that age where I can like realize that these people are human beings and they came from somewhere. But yeah, I've never even thought of Ozzy's like life. He just showed up and bit a head off a bat and then Ozzy right. was born. You know what I mean? That's crazy. I didn't know that.
But anyway, I think we're going to cut that one here. We just wanted to do, again, kind of an uplifting episode, although this episode definitely contained a lot of hardship. And
well, it's
all
adversity.
That stuff. It's adversity.
Course, you know?
And, you know, it goes to show you that music is definitely this beautiful thing that can heal, and it's also something to that's worth fighting for, you know, and
it's a ladder that won't break, put yeah. it that way.
And
climb you out of some shit,
you know. And if you were depressed before listening to this episode, hopefully this didn't make you more depressed. Hopefully you're you know, you're seeing a different perspective and you're ready to tackle the world. All right, see you next time.
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.